The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast on Wednesday, the 9th of September, 2020. On the podcast today, John Mayer, mining analyst and partner at SP Angel, talks about the UK electric vehicle sales and the following companies: Kodal Minerals, Bushveld Minerals, and Makanga Resources. Plus, Glenn Goodman, former ITV News business correspondent and now the author of The Crypto Trader, covers this week's Bitcoin, blockchain and cryptocurrency news. And Alan Green, CEO of Brand Communications, talks about Destiny Pharma, CVS Group and Aeris Resources. Plus, as always, two lists I have for you. These are the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours and the top five most liked RNSs. You can catch these at voxmarkets.co.uk. In fact, there are top 10 versions of both these lists right there.
Vox Markets is an online community of investors that runs a free mobile and desktop platform that allows you to track news and updates about any UK-listed company, offering RNS push notifications, detailed charts, pricing data, and much more. Find out more at voxmarkets.co.uk/app.
And joining me on the podcast right now is John Mayer, mining analyst and partner at SP Angel. You're back in the office yet, John?
Well, not quite in the office, but very much in my home office.
Okay, yes. Well, not in the office, but the home office. Yeah. Yeah, it's very odd. I think, do you know what I just think is happening right now? I think the government messed up early on. And I'm not saying they're alone here, because it's an unknown force, unknown quantity, the COVID-19. They messed up. They shut down too late. They locked down too late. Now they're trying to overcompensate for the mistakes they've made by pushing what's called bed blockers out of the NHS into care homes. So we had a high mortality rate. Essentially, the people that should have been, you know, protecting, they didn't. They pushed, straight into care homes. And now they're saying things like, they're trying to lock down again. But, you know, we're having a lot more testing. So, of course, a lot of people will be testing positive. But I don't know if I tweeted out something today, and it's from the BBC. Daily hospital admissions are really not going up with infections. So the peak happened pretty much in March, where you had hospital admissions at like 4,000 per day. And now it's down to like something like less than 100, today. So I don't see why there are all the worries about this. As long as we protect the people that need protecting, the rest of the economy can go about pretty much as normal, can't it?
Well, yes and no. I mean, I don't fancy getting a nasty flu that knocks me out for a few weeks. That wouldn't be much fun.
They're saying that most people now are getting it who are like, don't have a serious health condition don't have dementia or seriously obese with diabetes. They hardly notice it. It's like a very mild form of it, So it seems like it's been overblown. The terror has been overblown. And I think, still to this day, I don't know anyone who's had it or suspected it. If they have, it's like they may not know they've had it. So there we are. I don't think it's that big a deal, is it, really?
Well, look, none of the guys in my office have had it badly. There were five. We tested everybody and five people had it and not known about it.
Exactly. Five out of five. That's amazing. And nobody knows they've had it. I mean, that's...
But then I have met some people who... A family whose son brought it back from university, and where the mother and one of the daughters got quite sick, as having a very bad flu. So I think we do have to be careful, but I think we shouldn't worry too much, because... yes, you're right. Not many people are going into hospital now with this.
Yeah.
The treatments are so much better. And I think it's, healthier people have nothing so much to worry about.
Yeah. And do you know what? I still think I agree with social distancing and washing our hands more and just generally being a lot more hygienic. That will prevent, flu and everything, won't it? So, and a lot more other sort of, diseases being passed around. So I agree with that. I think that's generally good bit of practice to continue with, in the future. So, absolutely agree with that. And I think we can sort of work. And so, in your office, you said before we came on, you're doing like a split shift thing. Are you two different shifts?
Yeah, so we don't have so many people crammed into such a small space in the office.
Yeah.
Because we don't have big premises. So we do have, and of course we have to have, we have Chinese walls are very real in our world. So things are split up. So it's not all as open plan as it might be. And so that means, yes, we should be a bit careful with this. But we've got quite a lot of people back in the office, which certainly all the young ones are going in. And that's good. And I want to get back in with them because it's important that we share our knowledge and our expertise with these guys and get them trained.
Yeah. I mean, I did see there's a bit of a worry because I think there are nine companies, aren't there, now in phase three. You know, testing for the vaccine. AstraZeneca's paused their phase three study because they suspected serious adverse reaction in a participant in the UK. Now, these phase three, you know, they're testing thousands of people, aren't they? So, you know, you could say, well, that's to be expected, one person having an adverse reaction because he could have a health condition. But they pause it to see, and they say it's a standard review process triggered. So even there's a bit of worry about that, it's sort of expected, isn't it, that kind of thing?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I'm a mining engineer rather than a healthcare analyst.
I'm missing my chat with Vadim. That's the trouble. Vadim was supposed to be chatting to me yesterday, and apparently he's going into the office to sort things out. So he's a bit. I wait to get Vadim. But I think you know, people shouldn't be worried about that. It's going to happen, isn't it? You know, we asked this part of the process.
Look, it's what they've said is it's a precaution. This person could have got sick for all sorts of other reasons, and we hope that this person will recover very well, and we hope that this illness is nothing to do with the vaccine, and that given how many people are being tested at the moment with the vaccine, the chances are it probably is nothing to do with the vaccine, but they have to be sure, because you simply can't roll out a vaccine into the population without being 99.99999% sure that it's not going to harm anyone.
Yeah. And I think I saw on CNBC yesterday, but apparently these nine companies at an advanced stage have signed a pledge, which goes beyond, you know, clinical phase trials, not to rush. And they have to make sure it's safe, efficacious as well. But safety is the highest priority, because they're aware that, you know, they are rushing. And there's a lot of people at the moment, in America especially, say they won't even take the vaccine if it's passed anyway. They don't trust these companies. They think it's money above morals, essentially. So they are trying to prove to the public that they are being safe, even though it's a very speedy, you know, entrance into passing this. But you know what? Well, it's very odd. You mentioned a figure, and we both said, hang on, let's just check that, because it may have been affected by the overall downturn in car buying, but give us that figure on that on electric vehicles, which is astounding, I thought.
Yes, 1 in 10 cars sold in the UK in August was an electric vehicle, which is staggering. I mean, none of us had thought that we would see that level of electric vehicle sales in the UK. So, I mean, what it says to us is that. The general public are really going for these electric vehicles, and I think with very good reason, because they're wonderful to drive. They're amazingly fast off the lights, if you want to do that sort of thing. They are they're incredibly comfortable. They are much quieter than most cars. Their reliability should be very much better, because there are a lot less moving parts, if you see what I mean. And of course, the cost of running them is so much less, because you're just putting a bit of electricity in, and you're not paying the enormous amounts of tax that the government takes when you fill up a car with petrol or diesel.
Yeah. So when you see this, I mean, at the moment, I don't know what they are. You'd know this more than me. But some of the commodities needed for this, the rare earths, the lithium and all that stuff, what's the price of that? Are they rocketing at the moment, or are they having a pullback? What's happening with them?
We're still kind of bouncing along the bottom in terms of rare earth lithium prices and another of others. We saw nickel prices jump, and in fact are performing very well, and that was after Elon Musk said that he wanted to buy much more nickel, and he wanted mining companies to bring him environmentally friendly nickel nickel production from environmentally friendly projects. So we've got good performance in copper, nickel, tin, other fairly normal metals. But the, shall we say, the, what I would call the more industrial metals, the rare earths and the and lithium and cobalt, are still bouncing along the bottom a bit. We have seen life in the rare earth prices, which is good. And I think we will see life in lithium pretty soon, because we saw that we see the Chinese are still clearly very interested in getting their hands on more lithium production going forwards. And we saw the European Union put lithium onto their critical raw materials list. So what this says is that Europe is now having to try and secure supply. And of course, they're not just one step behind the Chinese. They're a whole run behind the Chinese in terms of actually doing something about it. So they're going to have to get a move on and start getting the mining companies and the lithium processing companies going in order to secure that supply chain for Europe.
Yeah, exactly. I know there's as far as listing is concerned, there's EMH, isn't there? One of the companies, European Metal Holdings. But so where are the Chinese getting it from then? I noticed you mentioned before we came on, Kodal signed an MOU, haven't they?
Yes, and I'm trying to get this through to investors in that Sino Hydro is part of Power China, which is an absolutely enormous company. I mean, it's bigger than just about everything in the UK, I reckon. Mm-hmm. And Sino Hydro have been working out in Mali on a number of projects. In fact, they are supplying water to the town of Bougouni, where Kodal Minerals is operating. And so they signed an MOU to look at the engineering and the studies and work through the Bougouni project with a view to financing and then developing that project. So Sino Hydro have an exclusivity for 6 months to do the work, and we hope at the end of it that the project will be built, maybe even quicker than that, and then they'll start shipping spodumene concentrate containing about 6% lithium out to China, where and remember that there's a major shareholder in Kodal Minerals, which is Chinese, which is it's called Sui Chin. They are somehow related, we think, to Shandong Rifu. And Shandong Rifu are the lithium processors in China. So they will take the concentrate from Kodal Minerals. And this would be fantastic news for Kodal to have somebody come in and finance it all and help with the engineering and make it all happen, really. So Kodal's still very much in charge. Bernard Aylward is running the show. But I think this looks very, very likely to happen.
Yeah, but as far as risk is concerned, jurisdictions, you're combining China with Africa there. You know, what could go wrong?
Well, look, there was a little coup in Mali the other day, yeah. So we shouldn't forget that. But I don't look when the military steps in and says they're going to enable a transition of government, you don't have, from a mining perspective, you don't really have to worry, because the mining license, I think, will come along fairly promptly, particularly with the Chinese now involved. They'll just check the boxes they need to check. We know that Kodal had gone 95% way through the process anyway, so they're just waiting for the last piece of paperwork. And I think this is looking fairly certain from here.
Yeah. Okay. Cool.
Remember, it's got a pre-tax NPV of $300 million, and you're talking about a company with an £8 million, £9 million market cap. It's There's an awful lot of scope for improvement in the value of the company, and it may be that the Chinese just decide to buy the whole company and do it all themselves.
Yeah. Well, but again, what happens? You mentioned that there's a Chinese shareholder in here. Wasn't that the thought process last time, though, where we thought the Chinese were just going to buy this? What happened to the other shareholder, the major shareholder?
Well, the Chinese shareholder is in here. If you remember a few years back, the Chinese government put a moratorium on money leaving China.
Yeah.
And so it was really difficult for companies like Shandong Rifu to get money out of China in order to buy companies. So they had made an offer to buy the original Bougouni lithium company in Australia. Mm. And they had to pull out of that offer, because they weren't able to get the money out of China. So What then happened was, without saying too much, there was clearly some money available in a, shall we say, an offshoot in Singapore, which is where Sui Chin came in. So Sui Chin, out of Singapore, bought the stake in Kodal, which was much cheaper than buying into Bugoonie Limited in Australia. And actually, Kodal were nice and polite to the Chinese at the time, and so they got the business. And as it happens, I think the Kodal project, which is next door to the original Gulima project, which is owned by Bugoonie Limited, has slightly better quality lithium in it. So that's been good for the Chinese, and certainly very good for Kodal.
Right, cool.
Sorry, it's getting a bit complicated.
Yeah, but, I got lost there. Let's talk about an old favourite, John Bushfeld.
Yeah, oh, great news from Bushfeld on Monday. They've done their first deal with the vanadium leasing business. So there's a project in a battery project being built outside Oxford, and a company called Pivot Power are putting in a 5-megawatt vanadium redox battery, and Bushfeld are using the leasing model, or they're calling it a rental model, to pay for the lithium the vanadium that's going into the Pivot Power battery, which is great news. So it's the first time that leasing model's been used. It means that it's going to be so much easier to finance these vanadium redox batteries, because they're big batteries, they're quite expensive things, and the cost of the lithium that goes into the batteries is pretty substantial. But the great thing is, you could get all the lithium back at the end of the process if you want. So from a banking perspective, there's not so much risk in it. It's a bit like, I mean, if you think of aircraft leasing, for example, there's enormous amounts of that go on, and it just makes the financing of aircraft, and in this case, it will make the financing of vanadium redox batteries very much easier, very much quicker to do, and will enable quite small companies to actually do things that they couldn't do before.
Yeah, cool. And talking about rare earths, you said there's something about Makanga, which we haven't mentioned for a while. What's happening with Makanga then?
Makanga, because of this EU action plan, Makanga are able to hopefully ride off the back of that. So, we are starting to see rare earth prices do a little bit better. Mm. And I think Songwe Hill, which is the Makanga project, will become a beneficiary of this. So the Makanga also have a recycling project that they're working on, which is good news for rare earths. And I just see that Makanga as being a beneficiary of the move by the European Union, or the European Commission in this case, to ramp up what they're doing with critical raw materials to ensure that the supply chains are secure for the new European battery and electric car industries. That's all growing very fast. You've got Northvolt now installing machinery at their new factory in Sweden. That's for battery manufacturing. You've got Tesla building their new gigafactory just outside Berlin. Volkswagen and BMW are all working on new electric vehicle production lines. So there's loads going on. But of course, it could all get massively held to ransom by the Chinese if they haven't got those raw materials chains set in stone. So it's very important, because all the Chinese have to do is say, sorry chaps, we're just holding back on the cobalt supply right now, and everything grinds to a halt.
Yeah, well, if they can do that, they probably will, won't they?
Well, given that there's going to be a huge amount of tension, I think, between the various trading blocks, and that Chinese car companies, car manufacturers, are going to look to sell electric vehicles into Europe, and I'm sure their cars will be pretty good. I mean, I'm not convinced they'll be as good as stuff produced by the UK and European manufacturers, but I still think they're not going to be far behind. Mm. And when it comes, and I think electric vehicles will come commoditized relatively quickly, in terms of you'll be able to buy a relatively cheap electric vehicle that does a good job without all the bells and whistles for not so much money. And I think it's going to be a massive market. And as we can see from the UK sales numbers, it's growing very quickly.
Yeah, well, you have to upgrade for the bells and whistles. That's so standard for most car producers, you know. Would you like the bells and whistles, sir? No, just have a horn's fine. I don't need bells and whistles. If I'm travelling at, you know, 30 miles an hour down a suburban street, bells and whistles are not going to stop an old lady from stepping out. I need a horn. Marvellous. John, thanks for that, fella, and hopefully we'll catch up next week.
Look forward to it. Thank you.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Glenn Goodman. He's the author of The Crypto Trader, but he doesn't just do crypto. He does other things. He can do home decorating, interior design. He can do all that kind of stuff. Mm. Hello, Glenn.
Oh, I missed you.
Did you? Well, you're the only person. In fact, apart from my dog, I think it's the only person that... an animal, I should say, that has missed me. I missed it. The thing is, I get out of the routine. I'm just talking then. I find it hard to get into a holiday routine, and I'm really whingy and horrible for the 3-4 days. Even my wife says, "You're not coming on holidays next time." I said, "I'm glad. I don't want to come on holidays." And then I get into it for like 3 or 4 days. And if it's a 7-day holiday, it's time to come home. But then, after that, I get bored. So if it's longer than 7 days, I just get bored after 7 days anyway. So then, oh, it's time to go home. Come on. And then my phone gave up for the ghost, because don't take your iPhone in... If you have a waterproof iPhone, right, and you take it in the sea or chlorinated water, it nulls the warranty. It voids it, because you're allowed to drop it in clear water, like, the bath that's clean. Anything else in it, if you've got a hairline crack in your screen or anything like that, obviously water will get in there. But it took like 2 days for water to get in there, because we went on a boat trip, and I was jumping off the roof of the boat and, you know, doing somersaults, and I filmed the kids doing it while I was in the water, and it was okay for 2 days. And then I literally put it on charge one night, got up in the day, and the screen was black, and you press the button. What's going on there? Press the button again.
Had it actually got wet, or was it just the atmosphere, just the mist?
No, I took it in the water. Yeah, because it's waterproof. They say waterproof, you know, so it should have been okay.
It's like those old digital watches. They always said water resistant or waterproof and that kind of thing, but.
I've done it before. The trouble is, the iPhone was new then, so it didn't have any hairline cracks. No, it is waterproof. They're fine. And my iWatch is the same. They're good. But if you've got any little cracks in it, of course, they're not waterproof. That's it. So a little crack on the back or something like that. So, so it was odd not having a phone. I had to go up up the room, check the stock prices of my computer in the room, which is annoying. But anyway, there we are. I didn't really know. We've had the American markets have sold off a bit, haven't they? And they've had a bit of a sell-off.
Yes, they have. It's been a tough couple of weeks. Well, you've been away, Justin, sunning yourself. Yeah. The cryptocurrency markets in particular had a big correction. But Bitcoin is now down as we speak. It's hovering around the 10,100, 10,200 level, which is a kind of no man's land, because it's as if it's retesting the breakout, the big breakout that it had a couple of months back. So it's not yet invalidated its kind of upward trend.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, you look at, if you or anybody listening looks at Bitcoin on a daily chart, at it on a daily chart, right, the big picture, and really what you're seeing is the market's still kind of heading sideways since about 2018. As I've said a lot of times on this program, I feel that the bear market is over. But I was hesitant to say a new proper long-term bull market has begun. Yeah, I was trading Bitcoin upwards on a sort of medium-term bull run perspective. But when you look at the long, long term, really, it still looks like we've been going sideways since the end of 2017. And we haven't yet entered sort of, you know, the new proper bull market, which really would only be confirmed, if you want to put a figure on it, once Bitcoin gets above $14,000, which was its previous peak. Once it beats that peak, you can safely say, right, this is a new bull market now. But until that point, we're still kind of in no man's land. And as I say, I'm happy, as you know, I'm a dirty trader. And so I'm happy to trade sort of medium term trends, ones that last for several weeks at a time, or maybe even months. But in terms of taking a sort of long term investment view on Bitcoin, well, it's still just too early to say that we're in that long-term bull market again.
Yeah. Well, Isn't trading stressful? Don't you just want to buy something and just hold it?
Yeah.
Well, there we are. buy very low, and just hold. That's what you do.
Well, very low would have been like $300. You know, that would have been a good time to buy an enormous amount of Bitcoin and then just hold it forever. Yeah, but, you know, but not many people did that because of hindsight. They didn't have hindsight.
Yeah, as we get older, though, we realize every now and again, Bitcoin is a heck of a sell-off, you know. Just buy some then. That's all you do if you believe in it. But buy some then, and like I said, it happens once a year probably. But by the time,
as we've talked about on the show before, I believe in Bitcoin as a clever technology and something that's becoming increasingly popular. But I'm not by any means convinced that it's going to be the world-beating cryptocurrency. There are too many decent competitors, and some of them have had absolutely astonishing growth over the past few months. Along with Bitcoin, the entire crypto market has fallen back, so all these high flyers have lost, you know, sort of 50% of their value, 30-50% in a lot of cases. There have been some mammoth falls, but when you consider that some of those, like I'm looking at one right now that I bought and it doubled in price and then it doubled again. And now it's halved. So I'm taking an investment view on that particular cryptocurrency, one called Coti, C-O-T-I. I think I've mentioned it on this podcast before in the past. So now it's halved, but I've held on to it because with that one, I am taking a very long-term view. It's quadrupled in price. Now it's halved. So, you know, I've still got a doubling of my money. So I'm not unhappy about it. But at the same time, you know, nothing is for certain, is it? And as anybody knows listening, and I'm sure pretty much everybody listening has been in the position where they've bought something and it's gone up loads over maybe a couple of years and you're feeling on top of the world and then it starts falling and you think, well, this is just a correction, so I don't need to sell it. But then it recovers a bit, but not very much, and then it falls even more. And before you know it, within sort of a few months or so, you might have lost all of the profits on that. So, you know, this is the problem even with investments, is that there are very few stocks, you know, you could mention Amazon, Netflix, a handful of others that actually just go up and up and up over the long term. But a lot of stocks, they might have a good few years and double again, but then they have a long period where they just fall, perhaps even back to where they started. And so, you know, even from an investment perspective, you still have to work out the optimum time to sell, surely.
Depends.
Depends on what?
Well, yeah, I suppose if you, but in the crypto space, surely you can look at companies, well, you know, projects that will turn back because they're so volatile, and they sell off massively, and they say, right, guy, I just want to turn back out of it. So I put enough in there to have, you know, a decent return for 10 bag, would give me a nice chunk, and same for that, or 5 bag, whatever. I don't know, just hold on for it, you know.
But, I mean, let's think. Here's a good example, is Next. I've talked about Next on the podcast before because it was one of my best, long-term trades or investments, if you want to call it that, of all time. So I bought it shortly after the 2009 recovery and held on to it for year after year after year. Up it went. There was never a big enough correction for me to say, oh dear, I really don't like the look of this. There were corrections, obviously, but nothing that was mammoth. So I held it as it sort of quadrupled. And that was fantastic. And then eventually in 2016, it did show signs of a really serious correction. So it looked like it was entering one. So I sold it. And that was a good decision because then it started falling heavily. And the thing is, since then, that was, 4 years ago? And it's still nowhere near the price that I sold it at. It's still much lower. So, you know, as I say, even when you're taking a really long-term view, for the majority of stocks, they might have a fantastic few years, but then they might fall and then they might just stay in the doldrums going sideways for decades, perhaps, not even years. So this is the problem that I have, I suppose, with the investment perspective. It only works occasionally. Well, Most of the time it doesn't.
At least for Next, though, they were never, you know, they've always seen as that sort of darling, really, of the high street as far as, you know, clothes are concerned, and you know, but you know, you could see this there's other options there for people to shop online, and their market share is getting whittled down because there's never going to be, especially it's changed so much, isn't it, the way fashion is delivered and how many competitors that they have, you know.
Yeah, but that was the case during that entire run-up as well, from 2011 to 2016, while their shares were rocketing. They still had a, in my opinion, not a good online offering at all during that period. Yeah. And yet the price, you know, so the fundamentals didn't quite really match.
They always overshoot, don't they? I've sold companies where I've thought, and you can never guess a bottom or top, of course.
No.
But I've held companies where I thought, well, yeah, I've done quite well, that this is way overvalued. And so I've sold, and then, you know, all of a sudden it's gone up by another sort of 50, 60%, even 100%. Oh, I sold too early there. But then, you know, at
it
least you got a profit. I know. Yeah, it happens a lot. I mean, and companies always oversell more as well. So if you're holding on, waiting for the bottom, there'll be a bottom coming soon now. It can't go much further. It will go much further down, but you've just got to, you know, it's all about, I suppose, if you're an investor, having positioning its size correctly. You don't want to have 100% in a company, otherwise you know you'd literally be wetting your pants every company.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, yeah, you've got to diversify, but you know, as a trend follower, as I say, I'm happy to hold on to something for years and years
now.
But I still don't trend follower as in trading. It's the style of trading where basically you latch onto a trend a little bit late, because as you say, you don't want to try and pick a bottom or a top, because that's the way to just trade in and out and get chopped up continually. So what I do is I wait until I see a clear bottom having formed in anything, whether it's a stock or a commodity.
Or
after the bottom has kind of, you know, you see the bottom forming, and then eventually you get the breakout, the big breakout from the bottoming pattern, and you go, oh, yep, this is it. This is the time to enter. So that's the time that a trend follower enters. We don't try and pick the bottom. We lose the, you know, maybe the last tenth at the bottom, say, and the price has risen by a tenth, 10%, and then we buy. So we're buying a little bit late, and then we hold on throughout the entire trend, which in the case of Next was years, but sometimes might only be weeks. It depends what you're trading. And then hold on. And then once the trend comes to an end by bending, you know, the phrase is, the trend, what is the phrase? Trade the trend until the end when it bends, basically. So when you see a significant bend at the top, then you've got to choose a time where you go, okay, I think that maybe this trend is over, and that's the point to sell. And of course, that's after the top. You wait until it's already peaked and started to go down, and then you can make a decision, I think it's peaked.
Yeah. Well, it's not a trend then, otherwise, is it? Just guessing, you know. So,
exactly. So this is trend following.
There has to be a certain movement in one direction to make a trend, you know.
And the simplest way to choose a trend. Sorry, I just wanted to say the simplest way to choose a trend for anyone listening who's wondering how on earth you decide when to buy and when to sell. For beginners, moving averages are the best way. Even a simple moving average. Sometimes people use crossover moving averages that are obviously more reliable as signals for profit making than just using one simple moving average. But even if you just use one simple moving average, you'll see at the bottom, the price will cross the moving average sort of, you know, off when it started on its way up. And then that would be a buying point. And then you can hold on. It obviously has to be a long-term moving average. I'm talking about like a 200-day moving average. And then basically when the chart has topped, it eventually goes down through that 200-day moving average. And that would be a simple signal to sell for a beginner. So that kind of gives you the feel for how to follow a long-term trend, basically.
In Next, right, look at the share price there. So literally, the 50-day crossed 200-day in December 2008. This is when it went down, and this is going up now. So if you'd bought then at £10.90, okay, you'd have held. And then there's a little dip then, 2018. So it was at £20, it crossed into the negative side, the 50-day moving average crossed down over the 200-day moving average, only for a couple of months, then it crossed back up again. So you sold, so you bought at £10, sold at £20, and then at £20 you bought again because it crossed back up. And then that didn't change again until, I'm going right up the top there, right at the top, £70. That's a nice return, isn't it? Just done that on the 200-day moving average. And then it stuttered there, but it did get to £80, but then it rolled over again at £80, and then it happened again. So that would be a cracking play just on the golden crosses, you know.
Yeah, I mean, look, I mean, people listening are probably more familiar with the word momentum rather than trend following, and there is
I'm sure people know what trend following means as well as momentum. He said two really strange words. Trend follower. I've never heard of those words before.
I'm catering for beginners.
And now he says momentum. I know what momentum. Momentum is a longer word than trend following. I'm sure if someone doesn't understand trend following, they're not going to understand momentum. It's a longer word, you know.
Well, you get the idea anyway. Well, whatever you want to call it, it's just about, you know, seeing something going up and then buying it and then holding on to it until it's not going up anymore. That's the basic idea.
But why you do that with Bitcoin though? Because Bitcoin is so volatile, it's hard to actually find a trend because it'll just break the trend temporarily, then it'll go back up, then it goes down, it'll break it again. It's like it's so volatile, it doesn't actually conform to a decent trend.
It's a pain in the bloody ass, to be honest with you. Which is why I've made the profits that I've made. Okay, so I've made some money on Bitcoin in the past couple of years while it's been doing all its upping and downing and so on. But I've done much better on these smaller cryptocurrencies that have done the kind of thing you want, which is a long, long bottoming pattern that lasted since the fall of 2017. When I say fall, I don't mean autumn in the American sense. I mean, you know, when at the end of 2017, when the market started falling, a lot of these tiny cryptocurrencies sort of lost 95% or so of their value and went into hibernation for a couple of years. And then some of them had fantastic breakouts just in the past couple of months and then doubled and doubled again and doubled again. So I was lucky enough to jump on board a few of those. There were a few I missed as well, and I'm kicking myself about not having paid more attention to the smaller cryptos back in sort of July or even as early as March after the big crash in stocks as well as cryptocurrencies, you know, the big crash I'm talking about, the Corona crash, if you want to call it that. So, but anyway, point is, maybe we concentrate too much on Bitcoin. I've talked far too much about it on this podcast, and I'm determined to focus more on smaller cryptocurrencies as well in the future. That's my solemn vow to your listeners, Justin.
Okay. I'm just looking at it. You can see something. Look at I said this before. No, relative strength. Once it goes to like 20.
Yeah.
If you buy when it goes back up above 30, you'll make money on that every time. Every time on Bitcoin. Every time.
I'll have to check that out. If that works every time. Does it work every time?
It works every time, 50% of the time.
that's good enough for me.
That's from The Anchorman, isn't it? It works every time, 50% of the time. I don't know. But so anything else you've been looking at trading and are you buying normal stocks or not? So essentially, Bitcoin, the uncorrelated asset, is correlated to tech stocks, is it? Or what? Or the market? Because it's obviously sold off. It's now mainstream, isn't it? It's considered a kind of a tech stock.
That's how people are looking at it. So it does seem to be, it is mainstream. And it's, Bitcoin is a sort of 200, well, the crypto market rather is a $200 billion affair now. So that's obviously significant. That's big enough to make it mainstream. Lots of Wall Street firms are now investing in Bitcoin or making it easy for their clients to invest in Bitcoin, that kind of thing. So, it definitely has gone mainstream in that sense. And so that would suggest that we're likely to get a long-term upward rise, that it will do well. But as I say, I'm still slightly skeptical about that, just because there are so many better alternatives than Bitcoin if in terms of international payments and that kind of thing.
But Bitcoin, surely Bitcoin dies,
technology.
Will Bitcoin die and just peter out? If it does, that would be really bad for the crypto market.
I'd be surprised if it died, but over a long if people want to invest for the long term, the caveat, the problem for Bitcoin is that there are better technologies, and that slowly, it's not going to happen suddenly, but slowly over a period of time, some of those other cryptocurrencies may just catch up and then take over Bitcoin. And, you know, I mean, it's happened to, we've talked about this before, but it's happened to so many big companies in the world, hasn't it? Ones that seem unassailable in their own market. And then slowly but surely, some interlopers come along and take over, and before you know it, that company sort of slides into obsolescence. So Bitcoin's not going to suddenly fall to zero tomorrow, but it might just kind of languish over a number of years, which would be sad. So that's the only thing that kind of gives me pause and makes me think, well, I don't want to shove all my money into Bitcoin in this desperate hope, like so many of the true believers on Twitter who I see just saying, Bitcoin's definitely going to take over the world. Is it? There's no definitely about anything. Is there? No, definitely.
Isn't by now, shouldn't it, according to that guy, what's his name, Plan B, whatever his name is, shouldn't Bitcoin be $100,000 by now or something
silly
like that?
I think so.
Because
I think it's according to his theories.
It's still conforming to his model, though, is it? I suspect it is.
His model has very wide parameters. It makes it quite easy.
Unless it goes to zero, I think it's still within his model. But I think the concept of Bitcoin, the format of it, and a non-trustworthy sort of monetary source is very good. Because, like I said, the problem is when you trust, you know, when you run a monetary source that's based on trust, like a central bank, they can abuse that trust. So I like the idea of it, but Bitcoin as a product, it's big and unwieldy. It's never going to take. It's never going to catch on, is it, in the mainstream? It's been around for like what 10 years now, is it? Whatever. And who's paying for stuff with Bitcoin? You know,
that's why people are talking about it as digital gold.
It's considered just an investment asset.
It's basically it's the new gold, blah, blah, blah. Talking of which, I've been trading gold and silver a fair bit as well, and palladium. And, you know, in the time that you've been away, silver, I sold out. If you remember, I was in silver and now I got out. Because we're in a sort of trading range sideways, but looking at the chart, actually, it still looks quite positive. There hasn't been a sort of a major fall in silver, or indeed in gold, not one that would kind of invalidate that long-term upward trend. So, you know, as I say, I got out because I was doing that quick and dirty trader thing that you accused me of, and I really want to try and do less of that now. I do prefer the long-term trends. The long-term trends do tend to be a lot more profitable in the long run, but, you know, again, as all your listeners will know, there's always that that temptation to take a profit and just get out. You know, oh, I've got such a lovely profit. Oh, I just got to take it. I want to lock it in. I want that profit. And I did that with silver, and I feel a little bit guilty now because I think it may well have further to go on the upside once it finishes this little sideways ranging period that it's in now.
Do you think we're in for another sort of sell-off here, markets-wise?
What, in stocks, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, well, as we speak, which I guess will be out of date when a lot of people listen to this, but this is, I'm talking to you on Tuesday morning.
Friday morning, Saturday morning, just cover all bases.
Speaking to you on Tuesday morning,
Sunday
and here
afternoon,
we are on Tuesday morning.
Monday evening.
And the futures for NASDAQ, you know, the sort of looking ahead to NASDAQ's open this afternoon, the price is falling rapidly. It's now down 2% already in the pre-open market. So if things remain the same, then when NASDAQ opens this afternoon, it will have jumped down 2%. And obviously we saw big falls last week as well. The S&P 500 is currently in pre-market down more than 1% as well. So, and indeed cryptocurrencies are following. So they're all sort of looking very weak this morning as well. So there may well be further to go in this whole correction business. People were kind of hoping that it was all over on Friday and that we'd head back upwards from there. But I think perhaps the bulls who had got so excited and got ahead of themselves and bought stupid amounts of Tesla shares at stupid prices, maybe there's more punishment in store for them before the market recovers. But as things stand, I mean, it's far too early to do anything like say the bull market has ended, you know, the long term bull market has ended. We certainly can't say anything like that at this point. The fall has been quite brief so far and not particularly steep. So this may well just turn out to be a nasty correction. I think that's the way things are looking at the moment.
Nasty, yes. Yeah, it's hard to say, isn't it? But let's be honest, it'll bounce back up wherever it goes. But if you've got a bit of cash on the sidelines, then it's time to sort of top up, I think. Not yet, but I think...
Not yet.
It was due, wasn't it? Let's be honest, ridiculous. And I said a long time, we were not going to have a correction until everyone's bullish. And it's gone that way a little bit. So I think at the height of this greed and fear index, at the height of the sell-off... The greed and fear index, extreme fear is down at zero to 100. This indicator, it was at 2, so it's extreme fear, and obviously it doesn't go below 1. That's when everyone's throwing themselves out of windows, pretty much. But
extreme fear.
Yeah, we were at a week ago at 77 on extreme greed, so that is. So now we're down at 59. So it needs to come down below 50, then people start sort of. That's when, or in fact, down below 25 would be good because that's when people start buying again.
Before we go,
everyone's upsold. Go on, 2 minutes. Maximum.
Yeah, no, I only had 2 minutes. So before we go, I just wanted to mention a stock. I don't often talk about individual stocks on here, but Lordy, I just want to talk about something sad. Yesterday, I got a signal. I placed an alert because I thought that JD Sports would be a good one possibly to buy. So I'd set an alert a while ago that if the price broke out above a certain level, around about 7.18, I think it was, then I would be a buyer. And it broke out yesterday, but it didn't break out very convincingly. It just kind of hovered around the breakout point. So I decided not to buy it in the end. And what's it gone and done today? It's only opened up 6%. First thing in the morning.
That's because you're not a fundamental investor. You should have been looking at the news that's coming out. The interim results are out today.
Yeah, I know, but you can't trade off the fact that interim results are coming out the following day because you don't know whether they're going to be good or not.
And that's why it's jumped up. You must have realised, you know.
I know it's jumped up, but the point is that the charts kind of give you advance warning of that sometimes, as they had done to me yesterday.
Look into my tea leaves.
You still don't believe it, really? You think it's just
I believe in trends.
That I got an alert yesterday for JD Sports, and then it opened up 6% today.
Because people know. People know about it. They've been looking at trading updates. They've been giving out trading updates right here at time.
That's right, but the charts are formed by human psychology, by what people are doing, by the amount of buying and selling.
The charts look into the future. No, fact is, JD Sports was massively oversold on that sell-off. It went down from like £9 to £3. And it's due a bounce back. It's been grinding up slowly. And now the trading update is not as bad. Well, interim results not as bad as they thought. And it's just froze again. So it's just from the charts will tell you about the future.
Ignore everything else. Yesterday, the chart told me.
You're out of time.
It told me. Look, the charts can't exactly.
The charts say you're out of time.
When the charts point in a certain direction, the charts don't say I'm out of time.
The charts say you're one minute out of time.
In a certain direction, there's usually a reason for that. They're composed of human psychology. All the buyers and sellers pushed the price up to a certain point where it broke out from a chart pattern, which was my signal to buy, but I didn't have the courage of my convictions, so I didn't buy. I'm regretting that today. And the point is, regardless of the news, I should have bought yesterday.
I would have done well.
I would be up 6% today, even though I wasn't even particularly cognizant of the interim results because JD was just one of many, many shares.
Why did Charles tell you to buy on March the 23rd? When they're at £3 a share?
Let's have a look.
No, I have no time for this. There's a guest pinging me in the wings. I've got to go. Have a think about it next week, yeah? And in the meantime, I'm cutting into someone else's time. Glenn, you should be on TV. You should know about timing. It's frankly, I'm being rude to my next guest. Oh, I said, hey, Matt, I'll blame you. Right, cheers, Glenn.
I apologize to the next guest on my behalf.
Bye-bye.
All right, bye.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Alan Green, CEO of Brand Communication. Do you all right,
Al? I'm fine, thanks, Jess. How are you, mate?
Good. Fine. Just, you know, the first day back, pretty much, or first, you know, first couple of days back, it's just hard to get back into the early mornings. So, obviously, I went to Turkey, and I found for the first time ever, I think the heat and the drink helps, but first time ever, I wasn't waking up like 4:30, 5:30 in the morning. I literally wake up normal time, like 7:30. Yeah, pretty bit early, but yeah, it's just nice. And I mean, get back to the early mornings. I looked at my alarm clock the last couple of days, like, oh no, this is early. yeah, just trying to get back into it, you know?
Yeah, it's this year, I mean, we're not going away. My daughter's getting married next month, and that's been chaotic enough with, can we have people, can't we have people? You know, it's just been chaos. So yeah. We just stayed in the UK this year for obvious reasons. And so as such, I've not really had a proper break from work. I've had, obviously, bank holiday weekend and stuff, but I find it's often easier to be that way, just kind of stay tuned into work vaguely, and then when things do pick up, it's not too much of a shock.
Normally I find it hard to switch off first couple of days of holiday. I'm quite grumpy first 3 or 4 days, in fact first 5 days, and then I get into it and it's time to come home. But the wife always says to me, "God, you're whinging," because I miss what I do, and I like the stock market, but I was forced into relaxing this time because my phone died. I went in the water with it, and a couple of days later, you know, it was on charge overnight. Woke up, just didn't come back up, so I couldn't check my phone and all that stuff. So basically, I just read about 3 books and played with the kids and all that stuff, and I was forced into relaxation, which wasn't too bad, really.
That's the thing. We are all so plugged into the market, into the markets, and into social media, and at so many levels, it's very hard to switch off from it. So actually, although it was a shock at the time, it's probably a very good thing that happened, because you really did relax, because you simply had no way of logging in and checking what was happening.
Yes. Okay. I want to look at stocks. What's on there? On the
stocks, mate. Okay, stocks. So yeah, a couple of things today. Firstly, Destiny Pharma. I want to talk about Destiny Pharma. We have spoken about this company on numerous occasions beforehand. Destiny Pharma, Epicode DEST, currently got a market cap of just 24 million. It's been much higher. They have developed a series of light-activated antibacterial drugs to combat diseases such as MRSA in hospitals. They've received backing from many funds and had many grants over the years. And I think when we last spoke about them, it's because the drugs have to go through so many phases of testing, often investors lose faith. They just lose interest in the investment story and of course, sell off. So we've seen really some of that. I mean, the shares have traded as high previously as 70, 80p. And of course, now they've hit lows of 25, 30p. 29p is the absolute low. But there's been a development today which has really pushed the shares up again. The company in their full year results announced recently, they have 7.5 million cash in the bank at that point, and they said that the phase 2B clinical testing, or the clinical study of XF73, was progressing on plan. And they're evaluating XF73 as a nasal gel to prevent post-surgical infections like MRSA. And of course, this is a big problem in hospitals, not only for MRSA, but other diseases that can exist. In last month, the company said that their phase 2B safety review, which is something that all companies have to do when they're engaged in a clinical trial, was positive. All the patients were responding as expected. The safety elements were all in place, so they were continuing the trial, or the the phase 2B study as planned. Announcement this morning, out of the blue somewhat, but great news nonetheless. Obviously, we're hearing about so many pharma companies getting engaged into work involving COVID at different levels. That's in the testing process, that's in the treatment process, and so on. Destiny Pharma, along with Sporgen, have formed a joint venture to develop immunity or potential immunity using the antibacterial light activated systems that have been developed by Destiny. And what this means is they will develop this drug using the innate immunity system within humans to develop immunity. They expect to start the first clinical trials within 18 months. They've said already that the treatment will be easy to produce, easy to develop, and also once it's in production, they can produce it at high volume and at low cost. And of course, this is a key factor when you're developing a treatment. It's all very well if the efficacy is great, but of course, when you get to production, if it's difficult to produce or there are production problems or it can't be produced in volume, then of course the actual value of the drug is limited. But in this case, it seems to tick all the boxes. Added to that, to the funding that Destiny already have, they've received an £800,000 grant to develop the Sporgen joint venture drug from Innovate UK, which is, of course, great news. So the share price has obviously risen on the news this morning. Shares have popped up to 53p, but it still gives Destiny Pharma a valuation of some 24 million, fairly modest given where some of the companies such as Avacta, such as Novacyt, some of the companies in the COVID peer group are. But clearly they've said that first clinical trials will be within 18 months, so that's quite a long runway in another sense. So I'm looking at Destiny Pharma. Of course, they're based in Brighton, which is at the Sussex Innovation Centre where we're based. So very keen for them to succeed, and I will probably move in and take a position in the company in the not too distant future.
Yeah, I'm just thinking though, there's all the biggest pharmaceutical companies in the world are looking for a cure for COVID. Mm. And just because they've announced that they're going to look for one, their share prices have jumped. They're not even, like I said, they haven't even finished preclinical program yet. And like you say, they're 18 months away to enter first clinical trial. Now, those take, you know, under normal circumstances, could take 3 to 5 years. Maybe if they rush through, it'll take another year. So they're miles away. They're miles behind the pack. Why is they doing this now? First of all, the small companies can't really compete in this area because clinical trials cost a lot of money. They cost a huge amount of money. And yet they're competing now against the biggest and most well-funded companies in the world. I don't understand. I'm surprised the share price even reacted, really.
Well, the thing is, it's not a cure, is it? They're actually working on developing an immunity. So in the same way that you go and get a flu jab, this is...
That's what I'm saying, but that's what all the companies... Yeah. AstraZeneca, all the big companies, you know, Johnson & Johnson, they're all working on these vaccines, which is to provide immunity for a temporary amount of time. So I don't understand, by the time this Destiny Pharmaceutical comes up with their product... There'll be many on the market, surely, already. Big companies can afford...
Well, there will be, but of course, I mean, for existing diseases and treatment, there are new drugs being released all the time that improve on the efficacy of the existing treatments in the area. So, I'm surmising here, but perhaps Sporgen and Destiny looked at where the majors had got to in terms of developing an immunity drug and believed that that although it would take longer to develop, this would be a superior drug. And you know, clearly they've got the grant funding from Innovate UK to develop it. So there's clearly some level of potential here has been recognised. So, but yeah, I mean, it clearly. At this level, it is hard to really sort of place a value on the future potential of it. But I think you've got to look at the fact that the JV has been put together. They've progressed this that far already. They've got the grant in place. is it an investment for your future? Yeah, I think it's certainly worth. It's one to tuck away in the back drawer. I think we used to say, one to get the certificate and stick it away in the back drawer, and then in a couple of years' time, you could see it come to fruition. And certainly, given the price action of Destiny Pharma, not forgetting that the core drug that Destiny are developing is the XS73. That's the to combat the hospital superbug, and they're already at advanced stages at the phase 2B trial with that. So I'm sure before this COVID drug gets out, or the COVID immunity drug gets out into the market, XF73 will be out there in circulation. It's not a one-trick pony.
No, I would focus on their core products rather than this. I think this is a bit of, just the point of it, really. There's a lot of their resources will have to be, focusing on this when... To be honest, they're way behind the pack, and the pack are essentially well-funded multinationals. So, we don't know. There we go. What's next, Al?
Okay, CVS Group. Spoken about CVS Group before. CVSG is the epic code. Shares have traded. Shares are currently sort of pushing new highs at the moment. £11.75 a share. Been as low as 670p per share. CVSG they're the largest integrated veterinary service provider in the UK, and they own a chain of vet practices and surgeries. Diagnostic labs. They have an online service called Animed, which has performed extremely well during the lockdown period. They have diagnostic labs, as I say, and also the MyVet Club, which is partnerships with independent vets, and even pet crematoria. To send your animal off to, or give your animal a great send off. So solid set of interims announced in February this year. First half sales up 15%, like-for-like sales up 8%. EBITDA expected to be materially above the first half of 2019. The company issued a trading update on the 24th of July, said that like-for-like sales had continued, they're growing at 7.9%. The balance sheet was extremely strong, and they have furloughed staff, obviously, preserved cash. The current year, they've seen a very strong sort of initial 8 months. Looking forward to the full year, the full year results are due on the 24th of September. So, like this, it's worth buying in the run-up. Buy the rumour, sell the news. But it's certainly a thought that's a couple of weeks away. The CEO said that full-year revenues were comfortably ahead of expectations. No dividend will be paid, but certainly sales have been driven by the Animed online business. They saw a big increase in demand during lockdown, and the business was well placed to drive further growth. And on a personal level, we have a couple of dogs, and goodness me, the amount of money that you spend on these animals. Obviously, you have pet insurance, and they've had various operations, but the whole veterinary business now has exploded in terms of its valuation, in terms of the money we spend individually. And I know, Jess, I think you've got a puppy too, haven't you?
Yeah.
Or your family?
Yeah, well,
puppies.
I just can't believe how much they spend on them, like vets. Just recurring revenue for vets and insurance. I think my dog's bills, vets and insurance, is more than my life insurance. It's like,
oh God,
it's nuts.
Yeah.
I know.
It's crazy. Well, we've got two Yorkshire Terriers, and they're both, one's nearly 14 and the other one's nearly 12. So they're getting on. And what you'll find is that the insurance premium just creeps up and creeps up and creeps up. And we're just paying a ridiculous amount of money. And
I said to my wife, how much? She said to me, some amount. I said, what's that, for 12 months? She said, no, a month. What? She said, literally, he's a tiny little dog. I thought, how could it be that much?
I know. You wait till I have two tiny dogs. But the thing is, smaller dogs live longer. So you'll find that the premiums creep up each year. And, of course, when they get older, both dogs have had operations here and operations there. One had a spinal disc removed. It was he was in quite a bad way. And, of course, that's an overnight stay at North Downs Vets in Surrey. And the fee for that was £4,500. So you know, that's that was covered by insurance. But you of course pay an excess from that. But of course, when you just go to for a normal trip to the vets, it doesn't cover that. You still have to pay for the treatment and everything else. So yeah, it is. Well, I say money for old rope. It's I guess that's a subjective thing. But certainly looking at the amount we're now spending on our pets, it's you know, as an investment proposition, that's probably the best way to get your money back, by investing in this company, because certainly the capital gain for the company over the past couple of years has been pretty impressive.
I know, but if my wife said to me, oh, so the bill's gonna be $4,500, I think I'd say, how much to put it down? Is that cheaper?
no, but that'll be covered by insurance, you know. It's for a major op. But no, it does get to the stage. It's it does get to the stage where I think you have to start asking those questions, you know. It's and also as well, if it's about the quality of life of the dog after the operation, isn't it too? You know, that's a key factor.
Yeah, and my quality of life. Having no money, spending it all on dogs, like where's my quality of life gone? all you can do is walk the dog now. You can't afford to do anything else. Right.
What a thing is, of course, it's the family pet, and the kids love it. So then, you know, it's once you go down that road, there's no turning back. Just so.
No. Listen, I our dog, she's lovely. I mean, I love it, and they are literally the happiest animals, most positive animals you ever wish or meet in your life, aren't they? They wake up in the morning, literally, and they feel like they haven't seen you for like 10 years or something. We got back from holidays, and she was staying with Megan's auntie, and we. We went in there. We worried because we only had it for like 3 months before we went away for 12 days. And we thought, what if she recognises us or forget us all or what? And we opened the door and she went absolutely berserk. She's running around the room, almost on the walls, on the sofa, jumping on top of us, really jumping at us, going nuts. Couldn't calm her down for 5 minutes. She was going mad. And I think, wow, no. I've never, ever received a welcome like that in my life. And it was nice, yeah. So they are, you know, part of the family.
It's great, yeah. Unconditional love. That's that's the great thing about dogs, yeah. Yeah, so.
Right.
So anyway,
Anything else, Al?
Yeah, I just want to draw your attention to it's a mining exploration company. And again, this company is trading on a £2.5 million market cap. Shares are currently at 6.5p. This is a company that has a series of prospects, gold, silver and base metal prospects, primarily in Scotland and Ireland, and also interest in Sweden and Norway. And I think we've said this before, given the amount of interest in precious metals and commodities at the moment, a lot of these small cap micro cap mining exploration companies are seeing a resurgence of interest, because projects that were hitherto uneconomical or would have cost too much to get the resource out of the ground are now being reconsidered, because of course the prices are pushing higher and higher. A company called Eris Resources, ERAS is the EPIC code. Shares have traded as high as 9.5p on the year and as low as 2.5p. This is a company that's run by David Hall, who is the CEO. He's formerly at Minorco and Stratex International. He's also a non-exec at Horizonte Minerals. The non-exec chairman is Anton de Plessis, who's well known for his work with Anglo-American BHP Billiton and Rio Tinto. And also Jeremy Martin is a non-exec director, and of course Jeremy Martin is CEO of Horizonte Minerals and has appeared on the podcast, the Vox podcast, beforehand. So far this year, the company had a placing raised $330,000 at just over 4p to advance the Loch Tay gold and base metals project in Scotland. And this is it's a highly prospective prospect with a minimum inferred resource of 250,000 ounces of gold. The mineralization has been confirmed, and coarse gold has been discovered in samples averaging 7.2 grams per ton. And through that work, a number of new prospects have been identified, extending the target area up there to over 3 kilometers. And gold, obviously, is where it's at the moment. So if you've got a resource like this in in a benign political environment where it's easy to drill, extract, and get the metal to market, then that does create, I believe, a very attractive investment opportunity. So you've got to look at the market cap in relation to, of course, the potential of the prospect, but certainly on Lockte alone, Eris is worth closer examination. Going forward, they also have a five prospecting licenses covering 136 square kilometres in Abbeydown in Central Ireland. It's a brownfield site based around an old lead and silver mine, and of course, with the old prospecting methods, often it was harder to ascertain the true potential of a mine or a region that was prospective for metals and precious metals. But new prospecting data and methodology is changing all that. The Abbeydown is sited within an active limestone quarry, previously, a positive metallurgical tests have been undertaken across the licenses. It's also reasonably close to the Tyner mine as well, which was in operation from 65 to 81. And it's in a proven zinc mining region. So, again, this is being developed. There's a very good video on the website, actually. If you go to the Eris Resources website, that will tell you more about the Abbeytown prospect. The company also has prospects in Sweden, Finland, and Norway, and these are both the gold projects in Swinland, across the Bronberg gold project, and in Norway there is a former zinc project at Gortelis in North Norway, which has also had revealed previously a gold mineralization in drilling that was undertaken in the 80s. And again, Eris is seeking a farm-in partner to help further their project and take it further down the road. So, yeah, you've got here a small mining company with a micro cap of 2.5 million with a series of prospects. The Lotte Gold prospect is the one that's really developing and making the news at the moment. But it could be worth a punt and want to stick away in the draw.
Yeah, resource companies, explorers, they are pretty much trader stocks, aren't they? Because any rise they have is not going to be sustained. Because how far are they from producing anything there? Well, a long way away, aren't they?
Oh, yes, a long way, and it'll be, and they'll require further funding to drill and develop, and also, of course, or they may seek to develop the mine through a joint venture partner. But of course, you've got, I think, Scott Gold Resources has developed in Scotland, and there'll be other companies that have resources and are active in the area. So I don't think that that'll be too hard. Particularly, and I think also you've got to look at the backdrop for gold as well. The Fed at the end of last month indicated that they were prepared to go with high inflation.
I agree with that. But I'm just thinking, with resource companies, they're nowhere near generating real value. The news will come out and say, we've discovered these grades, good, share price rises.
Yep.
They're planning to do a placing, and then it comes back down. And that happens for years and years, and about less than 5% of actually explorers get through to production where they actually produce real value. So, I mean, look, they raised, what, £330,000? Which is, how long is that going to last them? It's like,
that's going to keep
the lights on.
As we say, it's going to keep the lights on for a while, isn't it? But at the end of it, if they're able to undertake a positive, deliver positive results from Lockte and further develop that prospect, then there could be a farming partner. They might even decide to buy a drilling rig and do it themselves. And I think a lot of the mining companies that's out there seeking joint ventures, and we've spoken about ECR Minerals in the past. And others, a lot of them might might well take the view, well, it's, you know, given the delays with COVID and restrictions on movement, we might be better off buying our own rigging and doing it ourselves. And that's that I think, I think there'll be support in the market for them to do that at present. If they've got the permissions in place, they've got the licensing area, they've expanded the area at Loctay, so why not? But from where they are now to actually getting the mine into production, it's a long way off. But it's been done. We've seen
very rarely, and I just think it's a trading stock, really. If you're a trader, if you're enough, buy the lows and then wait for some news to land, because unless it's the financial results or unless it's out of money, it's going to be positive all the time. That's the way it works. They can get future funding away, and that carries on for years and years. And that's why now I've pretty much had it with resource stocks or explorers that don't have a line in the sand, where they're going to start generating real value, and that's real cash, and that's all it is. That's why stock prices are can rise sustainably, and not until a pop and drop on news, until sustainable rise in news. It's just about creating value, shareholder value, and what is value? Value is cash generation. And so I'm literally, and I've just sort of discovered this having spent, I've been investing now over 20 years, but I move away down the market cap size to micro caps, like I would say 6 years ago, and I'm always learning. But I think, do you know what, if you want to do pop and drop trading, fair enough, exploring stocks are good, so announce, they all announce good grades pretty much. They all come with good grades, and then that's the time, getting before they announce that, then just sell on that news, and then get back in later. But I can't be bothered. I want to invest in a company that I won multiples of my initial investment over 3 to 5 years now. That's what I want to do. So I'm looking at businesses that literally they're heading towards cash generation, and then they'll be generating increasing amounts of cash over the next 3 to 5 years. That's a way to invest long term, I think, and build wealth. I'm a rubbish trader. I've got to have conviction as Doc to put a decent chunk in. And the reason why I don't do any well at trading is because I don't put enough in, because I don't believe in it. And then I just jump up because I can't hold a stock I don't really believe in,
Sure. No, I think that's it. But I think as you go forward and you develop your trading strategy or investing strategy, trading is all about the psychology. How well you deal with the movements of the markets yourself when your money's on the line, and what your reaction is, what your reaction is to various events. And I think through that process, you'll find what sectors in the market suit you better. And it's sometimes it's a painful process, but I actually think it's for all traders, if you do go through a point where you lose money, you understand why you lost it, then it's a learning process and you won't make the same mistake again. But it's something you have to find out for yourself.
Lovely stuff, Al. Thanks for that, fella, and we'll speak you next week.
Speak you next week, mate. Cheers.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are at five: Drums PLC, non-mover, at 0.85 pence. At four, Alba Minerals. That's down 2.7% to 0.18 pence. At three, Amrit Pharma, up 53.13% to 2.45. At two, Vela Technologies, up, or down, sorry, 9.3% to 0.0975. And at one, most followed is Immu Pharma, and that's down 2.13% to 13 pence. Top five most liked RNSs are as follows. At five, Mosman Oil and Gas, Stanley Four and Falcon Drilling Update. At four, Argo Blockchain, that's the interim results. At three, Bango, partnership with ODK Media. At two, Bait Supply update from Vast Resources. And at one, it's Iron Ridge Resources, third phase drilling program commence at Xanadu. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos appreciado.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.